From the studios of Wavefront Audio Visual Engineering in Schenectady, New York, this is Little Brother, the show where we talk about high technology, low intelligence, crime, greed, corruption, and all of the wonderful things that happen when you mix them together. Like any responsible little brother, we tell on Big Brother. My name is Chuck Ritter, and I'll be your host as we explore this world of the high tech. This is episode 124 of Little Brother for the 25th of March, 2023. Stay tuned. Little Brother is right around the corner. As always, I'd like to remind everyone that the opinions and views expressed in this program are strictly those of the participants and not necessarily those of anyone else who may, for whatever reason, attempt to claim them. Responsible parties with an opposing viewpoint may request an opportunity for a rebuttal. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can write me at critter@littlebrotherpodcast.com, or you can post a message on the blog at littlebrotherpodcast.com. So, let's get started. The 27 million residents of the Indian state of Punjab had to go without internet access for a few days this week. Was this some massive simultaneous failure on the part of all of India's internet service providers? No. Did threat actors get into the systems and shred the infrastructure? Also no. No, this was much simpler than that. It seems as though the government of Punjab state ordered it so. Authorities in the state were engaged in a manhunt for Sikh separatist Amritpal Singh, and they took this action in order to quell unrest, leaving only voice and SMS working for most Punjabis. The move has been criticized by digital rights activists as ineffective and needlessly draconian. Sergei Kiryenko, the first deputy head of Russia's presidential administration, has directed all officials involved in preparations for the 2024 Russian presidential election to get rid of their iPhones by the end of this month. The stated concern is that the devices are vulnerable to interference from and surveillance by Western intelligence. Kremlin spokesperson Dmitry Peskov was unable to confirm the report, but has stated that any smartphone, Android or iOS, is too insecure for governmental needs and should not be used for official purposes. Twitter would love to tell you how many times they've been contacted by the various governmental three-letter agencies. They really would. So much so, in fact, that they have sued the Justice Department for the right to do just that. Well, a Ninth Circuit court has ruled the case of Twitter v. Garland, and its ruling is that it is not, in fact, a violation of Twitter's First Amendment rights to censor Twitter's efforts to keep the public informed on this. They're not even looking to tell you who, only how much. Of the many complaints that you hear about Twitter and free speech, this is the only one I've seen that's actually valid, and I seriously believe that the judge got it wrong. Republican Utah Governor Spencer Cox has signed a bill into law restricting minors' access to social media. The new law requires parental consent for minors to sign up for social media and also prohibits minors from using social media entirely from 10 p.m. to 6:30 a.m. Age verification will be required for social media signups, thus presumably requiring the production of some kind of ID document, which will foil the attempts of any adult residents of Utah to participate in social media anonymously or pseudonymously. The kids are smart, though, contrary to what many believe, and I expect they'll find a way around this block in no time. Nightscope is a manufacturer of security products, including security robots. The Philadelphia Inquirer is reporting that four Lowe's stores in their area have deployed Nightscope K5 robots at the stores. The robots are equipped with a host of sensors, including cameras, microphones, LiDAR, and sonar. In all likelihood, the best way to look at these security robots is to consider them a mobile platform for surveillance devices that are already deployed widely. The main difference here is that it can move and is far more visible. And those are the headlines. You're listening to Little Brother. Well, here we are again. It's time for another round of Who Got Pwned this week. We've got three this week. We'll start with a breach that, let's just say that I and probably most of my listeners do not really need to worry about. Ferrari. In a statement on the company's website, they state that they have engaged the services of a global cybersecurity firm, which they did not name, and have begun an investigation into a ransomware attack. The statement further indicates that they will not be paying the ransom, and of course, that they take this very seriously. Any of you out there ever read the Consumer's blog back when it was in publication? They used to have endless fun pointing out when corporations were taking things very seriously. Anyway. Our second pwn is a rare case of a known pwn by a state actor. In this case, Artemis Seaford, who was at the time a security manager for Meta, the parent company of Facebook, Instagram, WhatsApp, and others, she had her phone wiretapped by the Greek authorities. Cybersecurity researchers at Citizen Lab were able to determine that her phone had been infected with the predator spyware for a period of at least 2 months. The pwn appears to have taken place when she used her phone to register with the Greek authorities for a COVID booster. Yeah, let's make sure not to waste a perfectly good crisis, eh? And while we're at it, why don't we give people a reason not to get boosted? Idiots. For our third and final pwn this week, we look at the Bitcoin ATMs that have been popping up in various places. Threat actors have discovered a flaw in the ATMs sold by General Bytes, which flaw enabled the attackers to drain customers of accounts of about 55 Bitcoin, which doesn't sound like much, but that is 1.5 million US dollars. As I've discussed in the past, cryptocurrency transactions can be anonymous, but they are not untraceable. Eventually, the thieves are going to need to cash out, providing an opportunity for them to get pinched. I'd like to take a moment to talk about the Internet Archive. The Internet Archive is an ambitious nonprofit organization whose goal is to provide universal access to all knowledge. Their words. The archive contains over 48 petabytes of digital information, including books, magazines, films, sound recordings, software, and basically it functions as a library. Unfortunately, some folks do not see it that way. Historically, the Internet Archive has made books currently encumbered by copyright available by using digital rights management technology to allow visitors to the site to check books out. Again, just like in a library. And to cause those digital copies to become unreadable when the checkout period expires. The number of copies that they would allow to be checked out simultaneously was the same as the number of physical copies of the book that they had in their warehouse, thus completing the behavior of the service as a library. In March of 2020, however, the archive made an emergency decision. In light of the pandemic, they allowed more copies to become available. This was called the National Emergency Library. The publishing houses, well, they were not amused, and four of them responded by suing the archive. The National Emergency Library was originally slated to close, returning the archive to normal operation on the 30th of June of 2020. However, the lawsuit forced them to close a couple of weeks ahead of schedule. So I bring this up now because oral arguments in the case happened earlier this week, and the Internet Archive have lost the case. The judge's decision reads, quote, "There is nothing transformative about IA's copying and unauthorized lending of the works in the suit," end quote, referencing the fair use rules that allow some limited use of works in a transformative manner, say, for example, the way that this very podcast used some popular music last week. The Internet Archive has responded, quote, "Libraries are more than just customer service departments for corporate database products. For democracy to thrive at a global scale, libraries must be able to sustain their historic role in society, owning, preserving, and lending books. This ruling is a blow for libraries, readers, and authors, and we plan to appeal it. This case does not challenge many of the services we provide with digitized books, including interlibrary loan, citation linking, access for the print disabled, text and data mining, purchasing ebooks, and ongoing donation and preservation of books," end quote. In other news, the profits of the four publishing houses behind the suit rose an average of 12% during the time that the National Emergency Library was in operation. Very often, academic and scientific studies come along that confirm what has been widely believed for some time. It's not that the information is mind-blowing or cutting-edge, so much as it is that it is backed up by research, which, well, that takes some time to do. Keeping that in mind, Dr. Catherine Kemp of the University of New South Wales at Sydney has just published a paper about women's health apps, apps which track fertility, menstrual cycles, progression through pregnancy, etc., and what information they collect, how they use it, how they retain it, how they distribute it. Yeah, you heard that right. I said distribute. The last I checked, that's nobody's fucking business. But these app publishers have made a business out of it. In a summary of the report, Dr. Kemp describes a number of alarming practices on the part of the app publishers, including confusing and misleading privacy messages, a lack of choices in how the data are used, inadequate de-identification of measures when data are shared with other organizations, and the retention of data for years, even after a consumer stops using the app, exposing them to unnecessary risk from potential data breaches. So as I see it, we've got three concerns here. First, there is the fact that this profoundly personal information of women, yes, but of girls as young as 13, is being shared with business partners to target advertising, and it's being retained for extensive periods of time, subjecting it to the risk of breach, yes, but here in the U.S., where Roe v. Wade has been overturned and numerous states are looking for cases to prosecute, is also subject to legal discovery. As such, I repeat the advice I've given before, which is just not to use these apps. If you use them, discontinue immediately. I don't know if you'll have any luck getting the data deleted by the publishers, but it's worth a try. As usual, we'll end this week's show with the fail of the week. We have three this week. The first one up is Google, who are having some growing pains from a new technology, the high-efficiency image format, which is poised to become a potential successor to JPEG, and has some features that can be useful, such as the ability to capture a sequence of images or an edit history into an image file. So far, so good. The growing pain in this case, though, comes from the Google Pixel, which, in implementing this format, will leave the edit history intact when you crop an image. The result is that cropped screenshots and other cropped photos, well, they can be uncropped after the fact, sometimes after being sent to others, to reveal things that were meant to be cropped out and hidden. This is a replay of what we saw maybe 15 years ago with companies and government agencies redacting documents by having PDFs with black bars overlaid on the text, which could simply be removed. Not wanting to be outdone by the competition, our other fail goes to Apple. The Insider has a story about a fellow in Manhattan whose iPhone was stolen. In the short time before he became aware of it, the thieves had gotten into his device, changed his password, changed his personal information, ordered goods from Apple, taken money from his Venmo account, and attempted to withdraw money from his bank account. He reached out to Apple for help, but company policy limits password changes to one per 24 hours, and they further informed him that if he couldn't get it changed the next day, it would be almost a month before he would have another chance to change it. When he finally did regain control of his account, he was left in the position of having to get new documents, including a new passport and a new driver's license, because the thief potentially had copies of them. I never understood why some password policies have a limit on how frequently you could change them. Our third and final fail goes to GitHub. It seems as though earlier this week, they inadvertently exposed their SSH key to the internet by way of, what else, a GitHub repository. Classic blunder, really. They state that they don't believe any information or systems were compromised otherwise, but they have redacted the information from the offending repository and generated a new host key. Little Brother is produced, recorded, edited, and hosted by yours truly, Chuck Ritter. Special thanks to Fongaboo and the crowd at Helix for web hosting support. Shout out to the Albany 2600 group. Special thanks to Azriel, Joe Cadillac, Julie Bernstein, and Misdemeanor for story leads. Our headline music is Adrenochrome by Super Action 80. Our Who Got Pwned music is Analog Summer 3 by Asarhad. Our Fail of the Week music is Space Reggae by Zap. Our opening theme music and bumper is Around Chaos by Heatseeker, and our closing theme is Space Debris by Captain Image. If you have questions or comments about this podcast, or want to join the conversation, please drop me an email at critter@littlebrotherpodcast.com, or post a message on the blog at littlebrotherpodcast.com. Join us next week when Little Brother tells on Big Brother once again. Stay safe and be well. Sergei Kiryenko, first deputy, which will foil the attempts of any adult residents of Utah to participate in social media anonymously or pseudonymously. All right, let's start that whole paragraph again. Anonymously or pseudonymously. Okay, I'm going to try it one more time. The new law requires parental consent. Republican Utah governor. Either anonymously or pseudonymously. God damn it. Anonymously or pseudonymous. Pseudonymously. Gonna have some good outtakes in this one, eh? Republican Utah Governor Spencer Cox has signed a bill into... Oh, shit. Anonymously or pseudonymously. In social media, anonymously or pseudonymously. Holy shit, I said it.